Interviews from Carol Denny of Berkeley, Keith McHenry of San Francisco, both human rights activists who've been on the air before, who are wonderfully articulate, as well as a report from Adam Welsh of San Jose Food Not Bombs. Very interesting report from there. The hours Dan Hamburg speeches that we were going to play, we have had to preempt for technical difficulties. However, those will be played between 6 and 7 tonight. That will be Dan Hamburg's speeches. Dan is the Green Party candidate who will be running on the primary elections. I encourage you to consider voting for him if you don't vote for Dennis Perrone. I was going to suggest everybody cross over and vote for Dennis Perrone as Republican gubernatorial candidate. That would be quite a hoot.
I just want to say one more thing. The Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban has declared June 29th as Don't Sleep Tonight Night. And we're asking people to volunteer to not sleep between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m., the hours in which sleeping is a criminal activity, so that people can experience what homeless people experience every night of the year in our town. And if that's too harsh, you might just try going to sleep on June 29th without any blankets on, because blankets are also illegal during those hours.
And we'll be talking more about that, or hopefully somebody, if not on the radio, at least on the streets, as June 29th approaches. Stay tuned now for more of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides 96.3 FM. The next hour and a half is recorded, pre-recorded, I might say.
Sometimes it's real slow, and I'm talking to Carol Denny, who is not real slow. Here we are, I guess, talking to you on Saturday, May 30th, and you have very good news.
Santa Cruz!
Hey there.
Yes, how's everybody doing?
Well, hey.
Good.
What's going on? The FCC has been, not the FCC, I guess the city of Berkeley now has granted you a use permit. What's going on up there?
Amazing. And it's an historical precedent.
Really?
Yep. New use permit has ever been issued to a micropower station before. Mm-hmm. We got a unanimous affirmation from the Zoning Adjustment Board on Thursday, May 28th. So, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty wonderful. We were anticipating, it's funny because the staff had recommended against issuing a use permit. Uh-huh. Weren't sure why, but we wondered if they were influenced by a 98-page opposition that was sent by the CBA, that would be the California Broadcasters Association, the regional arm of the NAB, that would be National Association of Broadcasters, which does the do-si-do with the FCC, and you all know who they are. So, we were wondering if they wouldn't cave to the considerable pressure.
That's the FCC, the fools, clowns, and cowards?
You know them well. You know them well, and I hear they came to visit your house, trick-or-treating, no doubt.
Well, rumor has it they visited the highly secret unknown location of Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, there's a lot of rumors like that go around, but none of them are true. Actually, these people just go door to door.
That's correct. They are just doing a survey and want a brief search of your house.
So, we were amazed when, on the very day of the hearing, there was a sudden reversal. And I'm still trying to research exactly why it happened. We all, those of us who have contacts at City Hall, and I certainly have none in planning, but I have a couple of sympathetic people in there, were wondering, you know, what changed such that the recommendation turned around, and they suddenly recommended that they would issue the use permit, but attached 14 conditions, which were created by the city attorney, Manuela Albuquerque, no fan of mine.
Hmm.
And so, we looked at these conditions. They unveiled the conditions right there at the hearing after it was clear to us that they were going to probably unanimously affirm. And we looked at them, and some of them were a little silly. Like, for some reason, they were going to insist that only one person be in the studio at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I pointed out, you know, many of our shows have interview formats, and it just, well, it would be unworkable.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention silly. So, that one flew away, and then there was one about signage that was really funny where this one was ironic because the neighbors had been really upset that there was no big sign announcing the location of Free Radio Berkeley. Well, that's just because we have other things to do. I don't know. It never occurred to us to hang a big banner out front. Not that we're a surreptitious project. It's just that we never really thought about it. We finally put a little sign right by the button one presses when one wishes to enter, but that was just for practical purposes. We were not trying to be underground or, surreptitious, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
And the zoning adjustment board had a completely different take on it, where they were worried that we would put up a big sign and that it would be ugly. They usually get signage difficulties when somebody has a flashing neon number, you know, that is considered a detriment to the neighborhood. So these really comical issues kept coming up. But
well, plus these ugly homeless people are considered a sign of the time.
Unsightly, yeah.
Yes, right. So these were two of the 14 conditions that were, should we say, doused, dumped, and otherwise dispersed?
Thrown out or watered down.
And
it was wonderful because I really didn't have to say much of anything at all. The conditions were pretty well taken care of by the board that seemed to be offended on our behalf. I had a completely different sense of what this hearing would be like because of the initial recommendation against issuance of a use permit.
Mm-hmm.
But they unanimously affirmed our use permit. The likelihood of an appeal is very small. There were only three people who spoke in opposition to our project, and they were sort of neighbors who felt offended by the presence of a project they don't completely understand. None of them argued against micropower as a concept.
Mm-hmm.
They were afraid of, for instance, a possible interference with their reception, either television or radio or other things. Possible health effects from radiation from the antenna, and also there was concern about the unsightliness of the antenna, which is, well, a subjective matter.
Mm-hmm. So in essence, what conditions did you end up accepting?
Well, since, let's see, I have them right here, actually. The conditions we ended up accepting were... I don't have the final set of conditions, but just to give you an example, let's see, that we shall, no additional antennas or transmitters shall be attached to the tower other than, well, the equipment we already have. Well, we don't need two antennas, so that's a really easy one. I mean, I don't even know why they would write something like that.
Mm-hmm.
No lighting. Here's a good one, number five. No lighting other than aircraft safety lighting.
Yeah, very good, very good.
Again, you know, you have to be a couple hundred feet before, the FAA is actually worried about your tower. So that's just kind of funny. They're worried, again, about flashing neon because that's the kind of neighborhood issue that they usually have.
Hi, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, Free Radio.
Another one, let's see, all building permit drawings shall substantially conform to the approved use permit drawings. Well, that's easy.
Wow. Now, how many people showed up on the hearing to speak on your behalf?
We had pretty much capacity, which in Berkeley is 123. Some people may have been there for other issues, but we had a pretty healthy crowd.
And how long was the hearing?
Maybe an hour. What do you think? He came along. Yeah, maybe an hour. Maybe a little longer than that. It was definitely the highlight of the evening, and it was so entertaining. We had great speakers, some listeners, some broadcasters. Stephen and I spoke as the applicant, and we had and some neighbors who were in full support. So it was pretty wonderful. I'm still dumbfounded.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think we'd get this lucky. As a matter of fact, I was scrambling to find the $436.75 we would have needed to appeal the decision, because I knew we could win it to council. I mean, if it's appealed, it would have gone to the city council.
Now, did you have the benefit of any legal counsel to assist you?
We had the redoubtable Jesse Palmer, who has assisted in many, many projects here and works with Slingshot, and he argued against the initial negative recommendation from Manuel Albuquerque, the city attorney, and did a very good job, I thought. It was a remarkable document. Passionate and to the point. Nice combination of legal and moral. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he did a great job, and he also spoke on our behalf to the legal issues, which from the CBA's point of view, were simple. That being simply that since we had no license, we should have no use permit.
No CBA reps showed up to argue against you.
Well, we're still wondering.
Maybe they got things like the wrong hearing, perhaps?
Nobody argued the CBA's position, and we're still wondering if there was anybody there from these magnificent organizations we mentioned earlier, but I didn't see any, and it seemed like I got some of the students came over and shook my hand later, and I thought, I think they were there for adjacent projects. So I guess in some ways, we lost a comic opportunity there, but maybe Stephen and I were speculating that perhaps they couldn't figure out Berkeley's dress code, because you never know whether to come in tie-dye or go naked.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for a man who lives in suits to figure out that number, how to fit in, you know.
Is this going to be the subject of a Pepper Spray Times issue, perhaps?
I think it's Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe. Yeah.
Jolly Roger, excellent. What's your time frame now on the permit? Do you have to renew in a year, or?
Review in a year. I think the permit is pretty much permanent with respect to the permanency of the project.
Now, is this a decision made by the collective to seek a permit? Was it a demand put on by an agency that you decided to respond to? What's the reason that this whole process got into?
First of all, we're not a collective. I mean, someday I hope we can be, but No, we're not a collective.
Okay, what would you say you are?
I'd say we're a project. I describe us as a project. Working and wending our slow and clumsy way toward collectivity.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, I guess Stephen Dunifer and I discussed this, and I also talked to several attorneys about this, and our feeling was that if we worked it right, we could wrest an amazing precedent out of the issuance of a use permit. It's rare when people want to argue against a radio station in the first place.
So you decided to seek a use permit again for the reason that?
To lay a precedent, first of all, for the waiver of fees. And the important part of this is that we didn't want, you know, small micropower stations to be nickeled and dimed from a secondary expensive regulatory structure parallel to the FCC. This was my thinking, that the FCC, of course, you know, will demand hundreds of thousands of dollars for your license. What we didn't want is for each municipality to turn around and tack another $2,000-$3,000 on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And by setting a precedent, at least in Berkeley, of waiving all the fees, which I crafted after the precedent set for KPFA.
And what was that precedent?
So they had about $6,000 in fees because they were going to demolish a building and all this stuff. But I looked up that case and I thought, well, we're much more low income than they are. And that's how I patterned my application.
KPFA, of course, is one of the listener-sponsored Pacifica Foundation stations that used to be sort of community-oriented, right?
Well, yeah. I won't go long on that. I love KPFA, and I hope someday they can reflect more of the community orientation they used to have. But yeah, I try to be gentle with them because they're pretty mixed up right now.
Uh-huh.
They had all their fees waived, so I thought if I pattern my application in a similar way and play my cards right, maybe I can get all our fees waived, and then maybe any other micropower station can use that as a precedent. What I didn't anticipate is that we would get unanimous approval, which now bodes well for other micropower projects.
And how long has this process taken? I'm sorry, how long has this process taken?
Almost a year. It's actually just about a year, yeah. A year short a couple of weeks. And I've been working my tail off, so I feel very proud.
Congratulations, Carol.
Thank you.
Now, there's also something simultaneous that's been going on. We heard about it a month ago from Richard Edmondson of San Francisco Liberation Radio, that the FCC has been entertaining kind of proposals that micropower broadcasting be limited and defined and licensed under 1 watt or some such thing?
Under 1 watt. That's sort of basically how they have it now. Now you can get a license for micropower if you basically plan to broadcast, you know, the distance you can shout across your front yard anyway. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a rulemaking confab going on.
And I understand there was some controversy in the free radio community nationally as to whether to accept a proposal by the National Lawyers Guild subcommittee on this issue that sought a 50-watt ceiling, and I guess Richard Edmondson and others favored a 100-watt ceiling. Has Free Radio Berkeley taken any position on this?
Free Radio Berkeley has no official position. Stephen, of course, was a part of crafting the NLG position, which I think was sent out in haste. And I hope to see some healthy debate on this. There will be a San Francisco workshop where the issue will be raised on the 14th at, I believe, it's 2850 Bryant, but I could be wrong. It's in the Mission, and if you call Free Radio Berkeley, we can bring you into when that is. But basically, there's a training and workshop over there, and there'll be a forum on it on that Sunday. That's Sunday, June.
And the phone number for Free Radio Berkeley?
I'm trying to remember exactly the day, but now I got a calendar on the wall, so now I'm going to go peek over at it. And it'll be the 14th, Sunday the 14th.
Uh-huh. That'll be Sunday the 14th in the morning, or?
At noon, is that what, didn't I say that? Yes.
I'm sorry.
I don't have my calendar here.
Well, give me the number for Free Radio Berkeley in case folks want to call in with an inquiry.
Okay, yeah, I can't remember. So I'm looking it up.
That's okay.
Okay. I never call the information number, so.
Yeah, I don't either here.
But, yes, it's an important issue to talk about, and I, myself, speaking personally, favor. The voicemail is area code 510-464-3041.
That's 510-464-3041 for Free Radio Berkeley, and if anyone forgets that number, you can always call.
And if I could just address that issue.
Sure, just a minute. You can always call the local Santa Cruz Huff line, 423-HUFF, and I'll give you that number at any time. Go ahead, Carol.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think that each municipality, given its geography, given the specifics with respect to how many hours people want to be on the air, should be entitled to make their own decision about the wattage. And the reason I say that is that, you know, very often the wattage is not the issue. Your antenna more determines, your antenna and the height of your antenna and your line of sight is the more certain determinant of how many people you reach. So I don't understand the fixation on 50 watts. But I haven't had much discussion with Peter Frank or the others about this. I'm not sure I could adequately express their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling is, let's not do the FCC's work. Let's make sure we don't recreate an inadequate regulatory structure. Let's not do that. You know, let each municipality make its own intelligent decisions with respect to its equipment. We also one of the reasons that I say that is that the technology for micropower changes constantly. And there are people, innovators, all over the nation who are contributing to that technological debate. And it may well be that, for instance, near-field interference, which currently can present a problem in an urban setting, may be no problem at all down the line. You know, it may not pose a problem at all, given, for instance, a better output filter or some kind of shielding that we haven't thought of yet. Because of these possibilities, I just don't want us to limit ourselves. I think people can make intelligent decisions about their locations. And I think that it's entirely, obviously, we're a good example of working cooperatively with a city regulatory structure to try to design an appropriate location.
Hmm. You think it has anything to do with the upcoming elections in November?
Well, we don't represent a whole lot of votes. We do represent a lot of radical organizations, though. There are hardly any that don't have a spot on Free Radio Berkeley or that we would feel constrained to accommodate. We're happy to have people join us and work with us. So maybe they recognize that. I think we're thought of as having political sway, but I don't actually think we have any. But the bluff is worth everything in this world. We're sitting here laughing. I mean, it's pretty funny. We're very hard pressed to even tell people how many people listen to our station. I don't know, but we sure had some passionate listeners who showed up to the hearing on Thursday, and I really want to thank them. If any of them came from Santa Cruz or were friends of the people down there, I'll tell you, it really helped us a lot.
Right, well, it's really, congratulations on your victory, Carol Denny. You're, of course, a Free Radio Berkeley broadcaster and not to mention a notorious political folk singer and Berkeley activist for the rights of low-income and poor people, I would say. Has anything been happening on that front that we should know about?
Actually, it's kind of cool for the people I know under the overpass down here. I guess Caltrans went on a tear earlier this year, and now things have kind of simmered down, so I don't know.
So they're not going after people with will work for food signs anymore?
And all I know is, I know some people who are sort of camped out near the freeway, and they haven't been hassled in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what's happening generally in Berkeley. I just know about my friends, so.
Now, remember, you were talking about a month ago about the what you regarded as sort of a misappropriation of money by the, maybe that's not the right way to put it, but a large celebration by the Berkeley Police Review Commission and at a time when there was a budget crunch.
Well, yeah, the city manager up here wants to cut the budget in half. Or rather, do I have that right? Actually, I'm not sure I have that right. What he wants to do is take the one last full-time PRC officer and cut that position in half, something they've done before. So, I don't know, I didn't mean to say that we shouldn't acknowledge 25 years of police accountability in whatever state of disrepair. I do think that $4,000 is a lot of money to spend on a celebration. I don't know, I live in a different tax bracket than those people, so it's hard for me to watch $4,000 be spent at the yacht club on a catered dinner and not make a crack about it,
I think the Police Review Commissioner that I talked to said it had been cut to $2,000 or something. But still, that's $2,000.
A lot of pretzels is all I can
say. Hey, yogurt-covered pretzels, man.
And I also think the yacht club as a setting and the arrangements were not designed to highlight the state of disrepair in which police accountability City of Berkeley.
Any word from People's Park or Copwatch that you've heard of?
Not sure what Copwatch is up to. No, I don't know. And it's the big word about People's Park is the pergola. Pergola.
The who?
Pergola.
Pergola? What is that?
Just wrote some comedy about this. So, yeah, the University of California is testing the waters again on another capital improvements project, and this is going to be a pergola. But you may ask yourself, what is a pergola? You may choose between three definitions. The first, pergola, noun, an architectural error in judgment, usually publicly funded.
Yeah.
Number two, pergola. Number one, to expectorate, especially architectural argo, usually in a series of involuntary spasmic movements commonly found in consultants. Or,
is this a joke? Carol Denny, are you having fun with us?
Or two, spew, eject, or discharge in a gush. Or three, an emetic from the Middle English, pergola or vomere, the Latin. And then number three, pergola, noun, catalyst, which precipitates a process or event, usually riotous, being involved in or changed by the consequences, the birdal from Germanic blau, to strike. In other words, yeah, they're about to build a pergola, which in fact is sort of an archway, a trellis over which you, I guess you send your little creeping plant life. And all I can say is it's going to make a great bonfire.
So where is this pergola? Are they thinking of building it?
God knows. I sent in a public records act that only 8 days have passed. I have no idea. And they, of course, are loath to talk to the great satirist Carol Denny about the pergola.
Now, what's wrong with a beautification project, Carol? Don't we want homeless people to be perceived in a more positive light? Wouldn't a pergola and possibly a few statues possibly...
I've given this much thought.
A cupola, perhaps? Perhaps some fountains. Wouldn't that be nice?
Fountains, yes. I just think that there is a simpler way to make People's Park look more genteel. And I think the way is to get a lot of broken cellular phones, you know, everybody's got one now, and give them out to the homeless. because instead of looking like they're talking to themselves or just doing nothing, you know, they'll look like they're on the phone.
Isn't that kind of a phony solution?
We'll call it the Phone the Homeless program, you know. Donate your cellular phone to the homeless and we'll just pass them out. And then you'd save a lot of money because even this pergola, you know, is going to need a 24-hour armed guard in order not to become kindling. So, yeah, I think phones for the homeless program is what I'm going to push next.
Well, what about the plans to... this? One time, at least about 4 or 5 months ago, you were rather concerned about a set of rules restricting homeless people that were being institutionalized in People's Park.
Yeah, boy, did they table the rules discussion. I'm still waiting for them to bring that back.
Oh, so that's still sort of bubbling around in subcommittee somewhere? Or?
People into a subcommittee, yeah. And that's shameful. What can I say? The people who did that are still sitting there.
In the meantime, are the police enforcing a set of rules themselves? Or?
I don't know what kind of enforcement's going on up there right now. I think it's pretty much test the waters time. And, you know, the next crackdown will come when the students come back. That's just a ritual up here. It's sad.
So they're not going to go after for the here in Santa Cruz, of course, we have crackdowns in anticipation of tourists arriving for the summer.
Really?
Yeah.
It would be about now, huh?
Mm-hmm. But that's not the schedule in Berkeley.
No, it's when the students come back to town, they do a big cleanup. It's like, there's three big ones. You know, students come back to town, and then Christmas, and then Alumni Day.
I see.
Big alumni thing. Or, you know, if they had throw any other event, if the president comes or something. We had Prince Charles came here once.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it was serious. It was serious on the street.
Now, what about the UC Police Review Board, which required some, media focus when this question of pepper-sprayed students and brutally beaten students from a year ago at a demonstration against Proposition... what was it, 209? Something like that, the anti-affirmative action proposition.
That's what it was, yeah.
And I know that recently, you know, there was some hubbub about this, at least from the Police Review Board. I spoke to one of the commissioners, and he told me, you know, that there was real, you know, apparently the UC was finally at least admitting that it needed some sort of resuscitating from the bowels of the graveyard or whatever, wherever it was hiding. The UC Police Review Board, which of course none of us have thought had any real independent existence. What was happening with that? You know?
Yeah, they'll tell you. They would be happy to tell you they've always had police review. They just never meet.
Well, there's never any real problem, right, Carol?
They haven't had a problem in years.
Right.
They haven't had a meeting in years.
I thought the party is in the holding cell and the police are always invited. That's what one singer put it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the last I heard, they had come to some kind of conclusion about the pepper spray party they threw in Sproul Hall over the 209 demonstration, but they won't release the report.
So far, they still won't release the reports.
Won't release the report, last I heard. So we're all trying to see that.
And the city council majority is outraged and are demanding to be released, right?
I wish that were the case.
Mm-hmm.
We have the, you know, the uncommon luxury of a liberal majority this year, and they seem to have just done nothing with that majority. I mean, well, from my perspective anyway,
mm-hmm.
They could have accomplished a lot with that 5-council majority, but not a whole lot has changed.
Do you think that majority is likely to dissolve? Is it going to make any difference in the upcoming election? And what about rent control? Any comments on that?
Rent control sort of got decimated at the state level, so we're watching a whole lot of since there's a lot of turnover in the city of Berkeley now, they can raise the rent when somebody new moves in, so it's really sad. They have what's called vacancy decontrol. And that's pretty much the end of any advantage that may come with rent control, unless you live in the same place for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Rent control's in a very sad state in the city of Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the other thing you asked about? Oh, the election, how the election's going to roll. I don't know. In some ways, it doesn't affect me very much because the liberals don't tend to take a proactive approach to political change. So I'm always, you know, on the fringe sort of lobbying for change that they would consider to be impractical from a re-electee point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for me, it's always just about issues rather than elections. And
But one of the issues you brought up in the past, although it's been a couple years since I've heard you talk about it, is the Downtown Business Association or Downtown Business Improvement
District. My faves! My friends!
Yes. In the past you said that
friends.
These groups have been lobbying for anti-homeless laws with public funds and things of that sort.
You know what happened to them? It is so cool because they used to be a pretty white right-wing group, and then Carol Denny started lobbying against their public funding. And even Shirley Dean agreed with me that they should not get public funds and do right-wing political work. You know, at least conservatives get this concept. So they got defunded. And I'm really proud of that. And as a consequence, what they did was create a BID, or Business Improvement District, where essentially they had to reformulate along, if at least Republican, if not Democratic lines. And because of that, their politics are way watered down. So they haven't really been the impetus behind anything reactionary in quite some time. What they do still do well is suck money out of the general fund. Oh, can they suck? Wow. But then property owners do. They really do. Do a great job of that.
Hmm.
So, I get along well with some of their staff, so I got some interesting perspective.
Getting cozy with the staff, eh, Carol? There's also in San
Francisco. I always put it that I got friends in low places.
Well, hopefully so. In San Francisco, there have been two serious, to me, developments in the last month that affect those of us concerned with significant change in terms of poverty rights and so forth. One is the closure of the cannabis clubs, or I should say the cannabis, well, Perón's two clubs.
Uh-huh.
And the second is the establishment of newspaper racks, standard newspaper racks. Is this likely to be happening in Berkeley as well, closing of cannabis clubs and essentially the driving out of smaller papers through these kind of, pay up now, get with the mainstream type racks?
Well, we were able to stop the news rack ordinance in Berkeley, to stop it cold. And the presentation by City Solutions, in our case, with the third-party vendor that wanted to come in, the presentation was pretty inadequate, I have to say. I mean, for a bunch of rich guys, they were terrible. So they were pretty easy to take apart. A bunch of publishers came, including me as a editor of the Pepper Spray Times, and raised all the right issues. And I actually did have a little lunch with Shirley Dean, and she promised me she would see to it that should she bring the issue back, there will be what there never has been, a public hearing on the matter. Not sure I can stop it at that point, but I'm going to do my best, because we don't really have any difficulty here with news racks. It's usually all about making money, and I'm really horrified that the large papers in San Francisco just caved in. They caved in because they don't really have anything to lose from Ted Mounts. They'll be included. You're right. It's the small papers that have a lot to lose, and I'm really sorry about what just happened in San Francisco.
How about the cannabis club situation?
Club situation here, I'm not sure what's going on. I'll tell you one thing, though. I was saying to my friend here, I may vote Republican for the first time in my life.
Well, definitely cross over and vote for Dennis Perone.
I just want to point out that even though things are not going his way in the courts, or our way in the courts, with respect to the cannabis club, I love the picture of his having formulated an initiative that reflected statewide will about, being less hypocritical about marijuana, which is the number one cash crop anyway. And now he's got all the politicians in San Francisco and statewide scrambling to try to accommodate the needs of people who are ill. And I think that's a hell of a thing to have accomplished. Whether or not, the Proposition 215 was written, to accommodate the legal technicalities that they're throwing at it, I don't really care, because I think it was such a heroic thing for he and the crew that works with him over there to just see a need and try to fill it. It's so basic that my hat's off to him, and yep, I think he's got my vote.
That'll be in the primaries, of course. Anyone can vote in the Republican primary, even if you're not a Republican.
Yeah, it's a unique opportunity for me.
could be a chance to get Dennis Perrone, if not the gubernatorial candidacy on the Republican ticket, significant protest vote.
Yeah, a vote of confidence, and God knows who else, you know. I have long ago stopped trying for Democrats or anything like that. So.
Anything happening in the slap suit that we should know about?
Nothing right now. Nothing going on. There's still an injunction inhibiting people from speaking freely in People's Park.
I understand that some time ago the People's Park Advisory Board, or whatever you call it, sent a recommendation to the new chancellor that this be ended, and the chancellor wrote back, no way, that sort of thing?
That's right. He said, no way. It would send the wrong message to the community to restore free speech in People's Park.
Last time this injunction was threatened, as far as you know, in terms of enforcement, was when?
It was me, and it was September 19th, 1992. I did 3 days in jail behind shock, shocking chain on the side of the $3 million volleyball.
Was that the case of the sinister rose thorny-stemmed roses that you were accused of throwing into the court?
The rose throwing was a year earlier, but I don't blame you.
Well, they had their eye on you since that point, Carol. I think, you know, you really have proved the kind of, genteel terrorist that you are.
I appreciate that.
Well, anything else happening in Berkeley that I haven't covered? I've kind of not quite exhausted my list, but I'm getting down to the bottom.
Hey, good job. Not that we know of. It was a lovely day.
How did the People's Park anniversary go? Did you get up to that? I know that you were reluctant to discuss it last time we spoke.
You know, the People's Park anniversary has been taken over by the Liberals, so it's pretty damn weird. They keep calling it, you know, no politics. It's just a birthday party, so people come there trying to learn what's going on, but the radicals have been pretty much drummed out. So I think it's kind of a sad scene, but probably had some good music.
Well, an issue that also was certainly hot on Telegraph in February and March, which I actually witnessed, was of UC and Berkeley police bicycle cops harassing people for sitting near buildings, in spite of the fact that Proposition O was largely dismantled after having been enjoined in the first place.
You don't need no stinking ordinance.
Yeah, you don't need no stinking ordinance. So is that still the case? As far as you know, I remember when I spoke to you a couple months later, you said you hadn't heard of recent instances of that kind of harassment. Does it still look like it's on hold for the police, or are they going after people for sitting down?
I don't know what's happening up there. Down here, nobody's being hassled, you know. So, if you just really need to sit down and rest, you could sure do it at this end of town. I don't know what's happening around the campus, though. It's kind of a different atmosphere up there.
In San Francisco, in the Castro District, a variation of the Real Change, Not Spare Change program tried in Santa Cruz, where merchants backed a plan to get businesses and, I guess, other public agencies to give out little yellow cards with the phone numbers of, in Santa Cruz's case, largely closed or inadequate or irrelevant services, and the phrase, don't give away spare money, give your money instead not to homeless drunks and bums, but to social service agencies that will help out. That program is now apparently an issue of some controversy in the Castro, where Funa Bombs and the Coalition on Homelessness is protesting that program. Is any such program operational in Berkeley? Or?
They tried that. Actually, that was one of Donna Springs' things. She's one of our council representatives.
One of your liberal majority, right?
They did something like that. Her suggestion was that the city of Berkeley issue little buttons that one might acquire and wear, which would signify to a panhandler that the wearer of the button should not be panhandled. It was incredible. And yeah, they tried for the signs in the windows. That's what they're doing in the Castro now, like, don't give your money away. And the best response to this is to give a lot of money away. Give your money away. That's what I say. Give your money away.
Well, I know the response in the Castro is, I guess, every Saturday they have a demonstration where in front of the cookie shop that's supporting this, they give away free cookies. So times are rolling along on that issue. Well, look, Carol, I've interrupted you probably in the midst of a hot Saturday evening. I'm sure you have a hot date there, and I want to let you get back to whatever you're
Thanks
doing.
Thanks for calling. It's nice to talk to you.
It's a pleasure to hear from you. Any final comments or notes, or would you like your mystery date to come on the air?
Yeah, let's have the mystery date come on the line. Yeah. How about that?
That would be cool.
Okay, here he comes. Hello.
And who is this mystery date? What is your name, sir?
This is Confidential.
Oh, Mr. Confidential. You sound very much like a discredited one-time Food Not Bomb representative who co-founded the organization many moons ago. Is that in fact who you are?
Yes, that's true. I'm Henry, and I did co-found this outlaw organization, Food Not Bombs, 18 years ago, May 24th.
And just what's going on now? Is Food Not Bombs, in fact, getting political again in San Francisco by going after these innocent cookie makers who are trying to clean up the Castro?
Apparently so. I think there's a marital dispute going on there, and seems like it's good that Food Not Bombs is joining in that event.
Are you yourself active in this campaign or active in any of the other? I know you talked to me a couple months ago about the park. Actually, I think it was some time ago, about the fencing off of the part of Golden Gate Park near the Haight in order to drive out the homeless. This was last fall, actually. Anything happening around that?
Actually, nothing's going on around the fencing off the park, although people could kind of come and go more easily now because there is a bit of landscaping happening and the gates are open often and there isn't a police presence there. Not that many people do hang out inside of where the fence is, but it is more open now that construction's happening. But, and then the only real struggle I know around homeless people's rights is that there is some local merchants in the Castro that are organizing against the anti-panhandling movement that's happening by other local merchants, and mainly really by the larger companies like you know, like the Gap clothing outlets and Bank of America, and the neighborhood members of the Council of District Merchants Association that's in the Castro itself, and then and some of the street patrol groups like SOS and so on, who have been trying to get rid of the homeless out of that neighborhood. And it's I don't know if the cookie store is really the best place to organize around. I think there's a lot, like probably other places to organize, but that apparently is what San Francisco Food Not Bombs has decided to do, is to organize around this cookie store. Mm-hmm. And I am getting a lot of calls about it, in that somehow my number, well, what happens is if you call the contact number on the flyer, you get the San Francisco Food Not Bombs line, and then it does direct you to the International Food Not Bombs, as they say on their line, which turns out to be the phone that I answer, so I am getting some heated individuals contacting me about that specific issue.
By the way, as far as I know, I learned that you are not, in fact, exiled from Food Not Bombs.
Oh, I have no idea. They do have these bi-weekly meetings about this issue, and I don't. No one has contacted me one way or the other. I do know that, you know, that it doesn't make much difference, really. I have no particular interest in working with the local Food Not Bombs organization, in that it is not very well organized, and it's, I don't really have the time to hang around and wait for them to arrive. So I've been mostly working with other organizations and other Food Not Bombs chapters, which are somewhat more organized and have a more radical bent to their efforts. And I just work with more of those groups. And
now, I know that in, you know, one of the major concerns of a lot of groups, Food Not Bombs and others, has been the doubling of arrests under the Matrix program, which is no longer called that, of course, under Whitewash Willie Brown, mayor of San Francisco. As far as you know, is that kind of harassment still continuing? Do you have any reports from the streets?
The homeless that I speak to are certainly getting jacked up a lot, and I think that there's been there's been waves on and off of attacks against the homeless. You know, for instance, in advance of the big mayor's conference, there was a lot of homeless sweeps and sweeps of prostitutes and sweeps of people like myself. And
when was this?
And that was like almost exactly a year ago, June 21st last year. It was in advance of the.
I remember that. What about recently, though?
But in the recent times, it just seems like, unfortunately, the sad thing is it's become institutionalized. That the harassment is like generally pretty constant, and it's just blended into the fabric of life. Unfortunately, there's no really, after Operation Park, which was the thing that was in advance of putting up this fence, and then they decided to actually do some landscaping, to, and it's not even clear exactly if that was planned in advance or if it's just a response to protests against the fence or what was going on, because city government really never talked to anybody about it. They just set up a fence one day and they announced that they're going to use helicopters to search for homeless people in Golden Gate Park, and they arrested like several hundred people. And
there were some homeless deaths around that as well.
Several homeless deaths from people being, having, actually there was a famous one where the street watch for the Coalition on Homelessness videotaped the police confiscating Cliff Archard's belongings from him, and then later that evening he was found dead. Actually, early in the morning, next morning, he was found dead in the bushes next to McDonald's.
It was probably a drug overdose.
Opinion. Well, actually, the coroner's office said exposure.
Yeah, but he would have died anyway. He was one of those people that couldn't be saved.
Could not be saved as a 53-year-old adult person forced to live without any protection from the weather in some bushes. And
well, perhaps he should have gone somewhere else or gotten a job.
Yes, maybe he could have become employed at that McDonald's, you know, and rented an apartment in San Francisco with like 14 other people also working at McDonald's who could then split the rent for a studio or something.
Well, it's a hard world out there, you know. Nobody ever gave me a break.
It was pretty crazy, but then there's a, that seemed to be a lot of, well, the sad thing in San Francisco right now is that the political organizing against the city government's policies has been, been really disrupted immensely through a whole combination of very wide lies of people in power in San Francisco, including things like appointing, you know, I think in a certain sense by having Calvin Welch be part of the city administration help, you know, divide and conquer the